say a word first about case, as using cases as an instructional tool. I've been working on this for about 10 to 12 years and do a seminar on it periodically. I found it a very effective addition to my way of teaching, and I think you'll enjoy it. This case, all the cases that we use and we'll be using next week are live cases. The situation has been disguised to protect people. For example, this case is not Arizona, but happens to be West Texas, and it wasn't a snake, it was a salamander, but it doesn't make any difference. The situations are the same, and this is a case which has universal applicability. Next week I will be doing cases on abortion, euthanasia, feminism, and lifestyles. And all these are found in this book, which has my name on it too, but that's not important, which is, if you want to have those cases, they're available in the bookstore. I think there's 8 or 9 copies up there. So the case method is a form of teaching which I think is a useful form and one which I use quite a bit. I want to summarize, since I know some of you have not had an opportunity to read the case, I would like to quickly summarize the case for you, and then we can begin the discussion of it. The mode of teaching here is one of discussion. I will not be lecturing at any point, and well, I may say do a minute or two, what I would call mini lectures every once in a while. The case is a case about a snake, a search. The main character is Erica Mann, who is the Endangered Species Coordinator, ESC, abbreviated for the Federal Wildlife Administration, the Western Division. She has her offices in Phoenix, Arizona. She's a 37 or 38-year-old PhD in biology who has prided herself on high ethical standards, hard work, and self-sacrifice. Her responsibility is to enforce the Endangered Species Act of 1973, I believe. Many of you are probably familiar with that. Very strict act, which calls for protection of endangered species, even though they may prevent an economically viable development project. Later on, an amendment was made to that act, which allowed for a so-called God Committee, which could overthrow the decisions of the act if the economic consequences were severe or the promise of the project was considerable. Erica's job was to identify endangered species and to write the environmental impact statement for federal projects in her zone of cognizance. She was also, at the same time, a conservation committee chair for the International Herpetological Society. What's a herpetological society do, you know?
Reptiles.
Snakes and reptiles and so forth. Always had a fascination from an early time, stemming from a childhood infatuation with dinosaurs. Up to this point, her dual roles and the government bureaucracy and her avocation as a herpetologist had not been in conflict. Now it looked as though there was going to be a conflict. The problem resulted from an attempt by the Bureau of Inland Waters, these are all disguised names, to build the Blevins Dam on the Bailey River. And in the Arizona Wildlife Office had already identified the Sonoran Desert Snake, the culprit in the case, as possibly an endangered species, and that the dam may be the cause of the extinction of the species because its known habitat was the only place that they had a known habitat so far. Erica wrote a report, environmental impact statement, which called attention to this and suggested that they had thought about constructing an alternative habitat, which they had rejected because they didn't know enough about the snake, and it would take them many years of study to discover what it would be taking to save the snake. The environmental impact statement was subsequently, all her statements were subsequently altered by the Washington office, which came back saying that it would be easy to construct an alternative habitat for this snake. And needless to say, Erica was upset at the way her report was changed around. So she called a friend, Susan Winston, who was what might call a mole, someone who could tell her what was going on. And she reported that Senator Elder, this was her report, mind you, not a factual statement, that Senator Elder, who was a senator from Arizona, a former congressman and governor of the state, had put pressure on the Federal Wildlife Administration to get that dam constructed, and that probably, said Susan, was the cause of the changed report, which said that an alternative habitat could be constructed. In the meantime, she was getting pressure from various other people. A David Miller, a biologist for the Environmental Preservation Club, EPC, Reed Sierra Club, or some such organization, environmental organization, saying that this was the case they needed to test out the Endangered Species Act, and they hoped that Erica would be on their side. Enter Walter Jackson, Erica's boss, who says that, you know, really, Erica, what you ought to do is to let this one go. We're not going to win this one. There's no way, not a chance in heaven or, well, earth to get this one passed. We'll build up political, she said in so many words, he said in so many words, we'll build up political capital so we can save the endangered eagles or something up north. A voice of compromise that was being called for. Dick Gilsey, a college professor, reminded Erica of the unknown benefits that can be gotten from many species. He reminded her of an endangered species called the rosy periwinkle, which was known later to have certain medicinal qualities that were badly needed. And since we don't know what the qualities are in this case of this particular species, that we are potentially throwing away genetic material. Let's see, I'm just trying to, I wasn't going through the thing here. That's about it. As the case finally comes down, she's awaiting a call from a Jack Knight, who is the International Herpetological Society head, who wants her to get her answer on whether or not she is going to go for the snake or let this one pass by. So that is the dilemma in the case, of course. And then appended to the report is several statements about the snake, which are actually taken from the report of this other case, which this is a disguised version of. And I would like to start with this, if you would. Those of you who have your copies, maybe those of you who don't, can look on with someone. Page 137. This is the galleys for the book that finally came out. It's easier to zero. The top of that page, the second, the first indent paragraph, this is was written in the report. This is a verbatim. We desperately need water in this state to support mining and agriculture. This is a person writing in. I am reminded of the book of Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 to 29, where God gave human beings dominion over the earth and over every creeping thing. Gentlemen, I am concerned about protecting our environment as much as the next person, but this issue of the Sonoran Desert snake borders on the ridiculous when it comes to the survival of mining and agricultural industries of Arizona. What do you make of that statement? Now we begin. It's your turn. What do you feel about the snake? What do you make of that statement? Yeah,
it kind of falls upon most of our deep feelings about snakes, you know, we're suspicious of snakes, and God didn't like them either, so I'm losing that amount.
Genesis 3:14, and the whole story of Adam and Eve, the snake, the serpent at least, it's called a snake, it's called a serpent, it's traditionally been interpreted as a snake, is one which is the one that does the seduction in the case. And Adam and Eve, yeah.
I think it shows a real common view of how, especially in America, that we view our world is that somehow we own it and that what is best for us somehow ought to be what happens. Rick has something on his shirt from Chief Seattle that really talks about that, where he said, it says, I was standing behind him in line at dinner, and it really caught my attention. Is he here?
Yeah, but he changed shirt.
I'm assuming that was the rig.
We belong to the earth. The earth does not belong to us.
Uh-huh. Okay. Other opening comments?
Well, funnily enough, the person who calls to kind of support the snake, it uses a totally anthropocentric argument anyway. He says that the snake may be useful. It may have a serum or something, you know, and he justifies it for its utility to people, and this person is justifying his argument on utility to people. Perhaps their positions aren't that different.
Anthropocentric means?
Well, totally human.
Human-centered. Yeah. Doesn't consider the rights or the good of the snake apart from human beings. Other comments? Given the what was said here and what you know about the case, what are the major issues in the case? What are the major problems in the case? By the way, I'm not passive as a teacher in this case. I know where I'd like the case to go, and I will sort of nudge it in the right direction. What are the main problems? Yeah.
Well, Erica's integrity, not just in this case, but in the future, if she's compromised once by her superiors, then the second time is going to be easier for her to be compromised by them. And this is a test case for her, for their looking at her as to whether or not they can get to her when they need to.
Last night, we were talking about this. Those of you who weren't here last night, we talked about human integrity being a consistency or a harmony of act and intention. And here she has all her life had an intention to support herpetological things, reptiles, to support their existence, and all of a sudden she's being asked by her boss to compromise. Her report has been changed. So there's a breakdown, at least for her, on the question of integrity. I think that's a very important issue in this case, and one that's often not observed.
Who's to say that the snake won't live in the new habitat?
Well, that's true. Let's get into that when we get into the case. What does that show? What does that raise about issues in the case? I'm trying to identify the issues here.
Well, I think that is it.
She
has made a statement that she's right. Who's to say that she's right?
Okay. Scientific correctness, if I could just sort of identify that as an issue, okay? Who determines that? Now, that is a good issue. I haven't identified that in this case before, but I think you're right.
Well, there is a division that says that the habitat can change. She says, well, they're wrong, but who knows? Maybe they have a better herpetologist or whatever you want. Mm-hmm.
Good. That's the first time I've seen that identified. I appreciate that. Okay. What else is at issue in this case? Yeah.
There's the political issue of the senator and of negotiation, compromise, and give and take.
Okay. It's an issue of compromise versus the some sort of following of an ideal, isn't it? Okay? And in a sense, it's somewhat the same question as the integrity question up here. In fact, we might collapse those. They're slightly different, but let's link those. Okay?
Now, I hear there was an economic problem in that they're saying, well, we might have to expend a lot of money to defend the snake when we should take the money and defend some other species that is at risk.
Yeah, I think that's the compromise, political compromise versus the ideal question. What's the major issue in this case, though? What's the conflict?
So energy versus nation?
What?
Energy versus nature?
Yeah, or to put it bluntly, snake versus dam, right? The good of the snake versus the good of the dam, if we can summarize that. And beneath that, I think there is a basic theological, if we look at this from a Christian perspective, I think there's a basic theological perspective, which is, Jan?
Save the snake.
You've already said it. It's a question of Christian, what is the proper or the right, or we could look at it historically, what have been the Christian views or attitudes towards nature, if you will. So I'll just put that down. Does anyone else have those are the ones generally that I have identified in this case. Does anyone else have any to add?
We got a couple of symbols there. Snake is a symbol of new life and life, whereas dam would be a symbol bearing in mind the Bible study this morning of trapped water rather than living, moving water.
What does the snake also symbolize, I think more importantly than that? Or is a, in this case, is a symbol, if you look at the larger issues of the case, I think it's a symbol or an example of the whole problem of endangered species throughout the world. Since human beings have been on the scene for approximately 100,000 years, the rate of species extinction has been accelerated considerably over what it was. We know that species go extinct naturally at a regular rate, but the process has been extinguished, and some of our intrusions now, such as in the rainforest in tropical areas, presents a real threat to the extinguishing of a number of species. It's estimated, I put in a commentary in this casebook, 5 to 10 million species in the world, but a friend said it's more like 30 million species, and of those, only a small fraction has been identified, but we are putting them out at a very rapid rate.
It's not just the snake, it's everything in the whole system that the snake is a part of.
Mm-hmm. The ecological
like
system.
The spotted owl is an indicated species for the ancient forest. And if you lose that, you lose the whole
spotted
system.
Owl here is a good example of many of these principles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking along that line, I mean, if this snake lives in this particular area, who knows, there may be other species or the other aspects, right, that it needs to survive. It's not just the temperature or whatever. It may have, there may be other unidentifiable.
It's the bugs it eats and then
the whole ecological system.
Yeah.
I guess under that also just the pressure of population growth versus preservation.
Let's get at some of those by looking at this one first. Let's do it this fourth one, the snake versus the dam. What are the good of dams in general?
Electricity, right here.
Yeah, power. We have a hydro system at this place. Over about 50% of the power in the Northwest, electrical power in the Northwest, comes from hydro, by the way. Yeah, flood control. Yeah, what else?
Irrigation.
In this case, a very important one, because a lot of the irrigation waters in Arizona had previously been groundwater. They've been exhausted, and particularly around Tucson, the land is subsiding. So irrigation,
recreation,
lakes that provide fishing, swimming, boating. What else? Municipal water, mining industry is mentioned here. There's a number of good use of dams in general, but what do you think about this dam in particular? What's the good of this dam?
Supporting a population that probably shouldn't be there. I mean, there's growth in this desert area that, not natural for humans to be there, but it's creating that
violence. Yeah, it's encouraging people to move to Arizona, and the problem of people moving to Arizona is what?
They need more water.
So, and what's the political process that follows along? Why is Senator Elder acting the way he's acting? You may think he's the heavy of the piece, but what's motivating him?
Votes.
What would happen to Senator Elder if he decided to oppose the dam? He would probably be voted out of office, and another Senator Elder would take his place, who would be more favorably disposed. So you've got a kind of a round robin going here, a circular kind of system. More people need more water. You provide more water, which attracts more people, and pretty soon you've got a large population, which may not be sustainable in this region. Questions of sustainability should be one of the guides as to whether or not we employ certain kinds of technology. Any other understanding? Does anyone know about the politics of water in Western states?
Yeah.
Does anyone know anything about that? Can you tell us? There may be an expert on that here, and I wish there were.
I wouldn't try to pass off. I live in a pretty tough water wars region in northern Nevada. This is very topical. The discussion's going on right this minute.
Oh, and the case in Las Vegas, which wants to raid a valley in central Nevada to provide its water for the fountains of the big hotels, right? Is that the one you're referring to?
No, I'm talking about northern Nevada, which has its own water problems.
Yeah. How do you feel about
water wars with California
encouraging people to live in these areas?
That's the dilemma. People want to move to northern Nevada because of the climate, the wide open spaces, cheaper real estate, and they want to bring their lawns and pool of love.
What drew you to Northern Nevada?
After living in the water for 19 years, I know that I'm in high desert.
You like high desert. And the promise was there of ample water resources.
It's wonderful country, but the last guy aboard wants to pull up the ground.
Water, does anyone else know anything about water politics in the winter?
Chinatown.
What?
The movie Chinatown.
Of
course, Arizona versus the state of California and the Colorado River water, you know, I forget exactly how it worked. I think Arizona leased its rights to California until the population rose to a certain, and now they want that back in Colorado, and of course, California's got to go somewhere else for their water.
Yeah, it's if the allocation of the Colorado River was all taken up, there would be no water that would reach the Gulf of California and Mexico. By treaty, 10% of the water has to reach the Gulf of California, and not much more than that makes it. So there's very little of that river that isn't used up. By the way, there's a higher number of endangered species in the Colorado River than any other of our river basins, and the reason is that through the already existing damming of the river, the nature of the river has been changed from a cold, fast-moving stream to a much warmer pool, you know, reservoir kind of stream, and the species that adapted in one kind of condition are not suited for the other kind of condition, and so there's already a whole number of endangered species in the Colorado River Basin. What do you say about water politics in the West? It's probably the best example of Byzantine politics that you ever want to know. But by the way, do you know who pays for dams like this? The Corps of Engineers builds them. In this case, it's the Bureau of Inland Waters. I don't know who that is. It's the Corps of Engineers or one of the federal bureaucracies that does this. They pay, but who? Where do they get their funds? Federal government, from taxes. Do you know anything about the people who get benefits from the dam, what they pay? They pay a fraction of the cost. So basically, dams built like this, as far as I understand it, are frequently ones which are heavily subsidized by you and me, the taxpayers. It's a very interesting kind of process.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It exists in an ecosystem, and one of the things we talked about last night was the integrity of nature being the viability of ecosystems. Of course, so it has a utilitarian value within an ecosystem, not just for human beings, but for other species. It preys and is preyed upon by other species and forms a chain in an ecosystem. We don't know what that particular function of the snake is in this ecosystem because sufficient studies have not been done on it. However, we can assume that it fits in somehow. So it has a utilitarian value within a system. It fits, it's good in some respects, is how it fits into that overall system. What else is the good of the snake? Utilitarian good. Are snakes any good for anything to human beings?
Right, venom for snake bites.
Venom for snake bites?
Snake bites.
All right. This is a poisonous snake, okay?
Wallets and belts.
Wallets and belts. All right. Rattlesnake. Some people like rattlesnakes. Snake steaks.
Snake.
Did you have your hand up?
No.
Okay. Anything else about it? The fact is, we don't know what the good of the snake is, but that's the same thing. We don't know the good of many of the species that we're causing to be exterminated. And extinction is forever, as one of my philosopher friends puts it. And we'll lose with extinction, perhaps valuable genetic material with each of the species that goes extinct. We lose this valuable genetic material forever, and we don't know what good it might provide sometime in the future. So from a particularly utilitarian view of human beings, there is something of an imperative to preserve the genetic material, but also to, as you said, to keep the viability of the ecosystems of which we're a part. In some respects, there is a good for us from vital, alive, and functioning ecological system. Yeah?
Well, I was just thinking, I read Thomas Berry's book, and he explains how none of our art could ever have come into existence if we did not live on such a beautiful and complex and varied planet. If we lived on the moon, on a lunar landscape, we would be greatly limited in what we could express. So a snake could be one little tiny part of this whole complicated, yeah. Like a slither of sound of a slither of a snake somehow has...
They may have some aesthetic value.
Aesthetic, yeah.
How many of you like snakes?
And spiritual value.
Three or four. How many don't like snakes?
Actually, we though could go around that by pooling that genetic material. That is to say, we could go around, we could pick up all the desert snakes that are endangered and send them to zoos and send them to herpetology farms, and we could go back again.
In fact, there's some amazing projects going on in zoos. I was in the San Diego Zoo sometime last February or sometime. Have any of you been to the San Diego Zoo recently? They've got a number of exhibits of endangered species. Some really important projects are going on there and other zoos throughout the world to protect this genetic pool, to prevent the extinction of species as best they can.
I'd say this somewhat tongue-in-cheek, more than somewhat, but you could just deep freeze them, you know, take a few and
Cybernetic. How do you feel about this, removing the snake to a zoo or freezing its genetic material?
What do you think? You can't, it's too complicated.
Too complicated, you say?
There's something fundamentally wrong with that. We can do with it what we want. And I guess that's where, you know, looking at things from purely an economic viewpoint, I think trying to draw out the aesthetics is another piece, but there's a balance there that we don't understand. There's things beyond us that we're playing with. I guess the survival of the world is at stake.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I think if we can't figure out what good the snake is, and viewed from the snake's point of view, or even from our point of view, what good is the human species to us? Perhaps if we examine
what
good the human species was to us as humans,
find
out what good the snake was.
Well, there's a lot of people that you could think aren't too much good either.
I'm talking about
the whole species.
Well,
I mean, that's connected.
I think there's another kind of goodness that we haven't talked about yet.
Well,
we've talked about utilitarian good.
There's a chain of the ecology there, and this snake eats something else and that eats something else, and it controls good or bad. It controls insects and other things. It might cause us more trouble than the snake.
Okay, that's again a utilitarian argument, or an anthropocentric argument. Right now I'm wondering if there's a goodness to the snake. If there were no human in the world, would the snake still be good?
Yeah.
Why?
I think he has a lot.
Well, a lot of things that exist, I don't know if just because something exists that it's good. Adolf Hitler existed, I'm not sure I'd call him good.
It exists as a species.
Yeah?
I'm not a fan of mosquitoes, but the mosquito somehow.
But you would not will the extinction of the species of mosquito, would you?
No.
I might go after a couple of them, particularly the one that's sitting on my arm. In fact, I do regularly. I'm not a respecter of that particular individuals of that particular species. Did you have something to say?
Well, what is good?
Well, what do you think? I don't have to answer that. What do you think? Every once in a while, as a teacher in the case method, you can always throw it back. What do you think? What does our tradition tell us?
God
Christian tradition.
Said, this is good.
Yeah, God.
Therefore,
we talked about that. It created.
Therefore, it is good.
And before man, he created everything and said,
The human race was the sixth day. Johnny come lately to the scene.
Right.
After all the other critters have been created. And after each of the day of some creation, or roughly each day, the text says, and what did the text say?
I didn't think he said it. Or she said it after the human race.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't remember. I don't think it was after each one.
No.
The text says, and God saw that it was good. It's interesting that God didn't create it good, but saw that it was good. That somehow in it, it had what's often called intrinsic goodness.
That's personifying God God can be, God can feel, God can.
Well, I think with
make judgment.
The basic tradition says that somehow independent of human beings, however, that because of its connection to a purposeful deity, however we portray that or metaphor it, that there's a connection between meaning and purpose and value and the critters apart from us, intrinsic goodness. I think that's what the main line of the tradition has affirmed, though it's been often disregarded. Yeah.
I think that one thing this shows us is that as human beings, everything that's not useful to us, we do away with. Now, there was a time when we wouldn't have thought of killing babies, but there's so much trouble. And now, old people, there's so much trouble.
Right.
And then pretty soon, middle-aged people are going to be so much trouble. And so what we've done is taken this endangered species and transferred the same attitude to human beings and get rid of everything that's just too much trouble.
Right. And I think it's an extreme form of what she's called the anthropocentric view, centering on human beings.
But old folks and maybe not
human beings. And also, this, we talked earlier last week before you came of a sense of domination, which from some observers comes out of the Christian tradition, the have dominion and subdue text of the Genesis account. According to some people, Lynn White Jr., a famous historian, for example, has said that one of the reasons why technology developed in the West was this dominion passage, had take dominion and subdue the earth, which imparted a kind of dominating quality to Christian thought. I think that may be true as an observation. I don't think that's what the tradition really says.
Coming back to the biblical story, there's the Exodus experience where Moses put up the serpent in the wilderness as a symbolic sign, counteracting somewhat that whole matter of our fear and our putting guilt on the snake in the Garden of Eden, and making that the symbol of, as people looked at this snake, salvation or at least being healed. Fear. So that's kind of the mystical element in the Bible that has something to say to us about the goodness of that particular creature.
Okay, good. That's interesting.
I think that's an awfully important point, too, because life is so full of ambiguities. And every time you turn around, you can't do anything wrong but what some right doesn't come of it, and something right but what some wrong doesn't come of it. And it's probably just part of working out, you know, in fear and trembling, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the, if I get back to the question of intrinsic value in snakes, at least the Christian tradition links that value to a purposeful God. If you take away those underpinnings of a deity who says that they are good or creates them good, the problem is a very difficult one philosophically. I don't want to get into it, but let me just alert you to the problem that identifying intrinsic goodness is a problem, that is, the goodness apart from human beings. The problem is this, that human beings are the only valuing creature that we know of. And so when we attribute intrinsic value to the critters, aren't we just, in fact, attributing our value, our anthropocentric kind of valuing still? And the philosophical difficulty of value theory, which I'm, as I say, I'm not going to get into, I'm not sure I understand myself. It's a severe problem. Some interesting books have been written on it if you're interested in that specific issue. Interesting. Jeff?
Another issue that really wasn't, maybe it's related to some of these issues of compromise versus appeal, is one of power, too. You know, that I think, as at least for me as a Christian, part of what I believe the biblical tradition says is to be skeptical or to question those powers that want to twist me, and I think there's that kind of question in here that as a Christian we need to have that kind of skepticism. Now wait a minute, what is that power that is twisting me in this direction? Where is that coming from?
And where is it coming from in this case?
It's coming from this senator, I think, isn't it?
Well, he sits at the top of a big pyramid of what? Yeah. Who's providing the pressure for this dam?
The voters.
Voters, the agricultural interests, mining interests. That's a considerable power.
A considerable power that I think at least, you know, as a Christian, one needs to ask the question, what are those other interests that motivate?
And how many votes does the snake have?
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, right, liberation theology of whatever kind of the Sonoran. I mean, there's, I think, there, who's, and it sounds kind of trite and silly, but who is speaking for the snake, you know, in a sense that in the same sense of who's speaking for the Hebrew slave? There's the person or the entity at the bottom, and to what extent are, you know, the Christians.
Who in this case is speaking for the snake? What forces? Erica. There are certain power forces.
Right.
Erica, right?
She has the power because it says that's on her job description.
That's right. And there is this Endangered Species Act, which if you read it, is a very powerful act. It has upset a lot of people.
But there is this other power that's seeming to twist that.
Well, there's certainly a conflict. And we have the work of these societies and the various environmental organizations, which have been working to prevent some of the worst excesses. They're often accused of being environmentalists and so forth. So this is not, there are forces ranged against those powers in this case. Well, let me just ask a final question here on this stage of the case study. Do you think citizens of the United States and they're represented by the Bureau of Inland Waters should build this dam, irrespective of the Endangered Species Act? What would you do if you could will the construction or the blocking of this dam? Is there anyone who feels intrepid? I know the ethos of Holden Village. And I dare say there's very few dam builders here, particularly since no one's from Arizona. Are there any dam builders in the room that would build, I should say, DAM builders?
Well, I sure wouldn't want to give up the dams that are benefiting me now.
And
I'm not sure I'd advocate building new ones. I might question that.
And the energy they provide is very clean energy.
But why does it have to be a choice between the dam and the snake? Maybe there's another way to do it. There might be alternative sources of water or power or whatever that could really be worked out if people put their minds to it.
There aren't a whole lot of alternatives in the Colorado River Basin right now.
So, but, I mean, there might be whole other society changes that could be made, and it doesn't always have to be.
But your decision would say to be... pause on this one and develop
other solutions, whether it be, I realize you've got to have water.
If you want to live in the desert.
But we could work on alternative energy sources in this country, which we really have not done.
True, and we could perhaps really apply some stringent conservation kinds of efforts, which we have not.
Right.
Basically, our solution to power problems has been build more, extend technology, consume more.
They always make it an either-or argument, dam versus snake, and nobody ever
looks at the in-between things. Yeah. Well, it heightens the interest in the case, though, doesn't it? If I gave you a perfect out of this case, might as well sit in the sun outside.
I don't have any great appreciation for this particular snake, but I can see the snake saving us from ourselves, from destroying the riparian area that the stream has, from making us create another batch of power and irrigation and whatnot, that we're just going to pour the water on the land and waste it as we do now. And someday we're going to have to stop that and begin conserving. And if the snake can help us do that, I say great for the snake.
So in the Northwest, maybe you celebrate the spotted owl because you somehow want to preserve at least some old growth forest from being cut.
Yeah.
This is really not mentioned in this, but one of the things that really galled me in Arizona and also in California, that having at least been in Israel once and seen you know, there's one small river, the Jordan River, and of course it's manipulated in various ways. But one of the things that the Israelis have done is to put all their water through conduits to save evaporation, and it just galls me to see this water traveling through Phoenix, traveling down to the San Joaquin Valley. How much could be saved in evaporation? You know, maybe you don't need a dam. Maybe if you just spend the money you would put on the dam and cover the irrigation. I mean, the canal.
Oh, yeah, vastly. There's just huge evaporation behind the reservoirs on these dams.
It is just.
Except there's meteorological balance in that too. I mean, that evaporated water doesn't leave the system. It's part of the system that ultimately comes back in some way. It doesn't disappear.
Right.
Well, you know, so if you
come back later somewhere else.
Yeah. Of course, it may fall on dry ground and be absorbed. Yeah. So.
But anyway,
that's a good point. I think that's a good point.
I guess the other thing that we often lose sight of, at least in other discussions that I've been in with this, is that maybe we need to change our view of consumption and our view of you know, what standard of living is, and that if you live in the desert, you don't have a grass, you know, or lawn or whatever, that you live within the limits and within the constraints of the ecocycle that you or system that you live in. You know, learning to change ourselves to adapt rather than changing the environment where we live.
Think of all those snowbirds in Arizona without a golf course.
Yeah. Maybe push that point one step further and say, now, middle class advocates of this endangered species are all comfort creatures, but when it comes to some of the people in the ghetto, many times they can't afford even the small air conditioner, and they're the ones that are they're sitting there without that kind of a comfort, and everybody else said, well, let's cut down on the people that are pushed down because of economic reasons. They have no choice.
Does anyone want to defend the dam? None. Are you scared to stand up in this crowd? One of the things I was thinking about doing in this week, or thinking about doing this week, is having a trial, putting the snake on trial. But I didn't figure I could find anyone to prosecute the snake, and if I did it myself, as someone said, when you tell the truth, you better have one foot on a bicycle. Get out of town fast. Anyway.
And maybe it's back to that question of, well, does it affect me or not? You know,
what would happen if you write this case down in Arizona?
Or what if you do it here? You know, I mean, what if the environmental impact of Holden Village is destroying the ecosystem? You close down Holden Village, you know, or do you keep it here?
Or is there anyone who would want in the owl logger kind of thing in the Northwest that would take the case of the economic viability of some of our logging camps, which of course is now a problem. Would you do that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Would you state the case?
Well, I'm not that educated to state it, and I know right now they're doing quite a bit of studies that find that the habitat of the owl can work in New Forest as well.
Some of the logging companies are finding some spotted, at least I read that in the newspaper. What?
That's not really true.
Did I miss something?
In
old growth, in new growth, in second growth.
Well, it isn't the logging comes, it's state of it's the science department of the state that's looking at it. Mm-hmm. And I would build the dam if I knew a lot more.
You knew about a lot more about the case.
Yeah, because the cycle ecology or whatever it is changes all the time. Sure, look at the Philippines. You knocked out a few species there with a mouse.
Yeah, that's natural extinction. I don't think there's nothing we can do to control that, and I don't think we would want to control that. We might want to preserve some species that were going out because of natural reasons.
Why can't they be preserved?
I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I don't know what the possibility. Rick, do you inform us on that?
No, I can't on that.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to mention that the case may get even more germane to this area as more of the Pacific salmon species enter
Oh, up in the Elwha River. There's two dams on the Elwha which are old, and one of them is even, I think, ready to go anyway, and try to restore the Elwha salmon runs that were once quite prolific.
I think the scariest thing gets back to what somebody said, maybe Bruce, but to put ourselves as human beings in such an elevated position that we have the audacity to think that we can figure all this out and balance it without preserving creation, which seems to do very well on its own, is the scariest thing to me. I mean, to make tree plantations and not preserve the forest as it grew up. I don't think we know.
You wouldn't want to just leave the forest, as all forests the way it was. You would like to preserve some old growth, I assume.
Every inch we have now.
Yeah. Actually, there's probably less than 10% in the Northwest of old growth, and that depends on how you look at it. Some areas that are mountain peaks are considered old wilderness areas in Canada.
Always leave it a mountain peak.
Okay, let's... We have about 10 more minutes on the case. Now I want to turn to this other issue of integrity and get back to Erica in this case. An interesting thing is said by Walter Jackson that we ought to use our political clout to save the eagles up north, I think it was, probably some other endangered species that we may, by eating this one, basically will... perhaps have more political clout next time around. And Erica faces a question of personal integrity with regard to the changing of report. Her scientific analysis was misused. She finally has the issue of whether or not she's going to stay with her principles herself or compromise. And the question of her longstanding principles of protecting wildlife and her job as an environmental species coordinator. The problem is she may well lose her job in this situation if she raises too much a ruckus. What do you make of all that? What do you think Erica should do in this case? What's her integrity?
I think she should stick with her integrity and fight at the dam. Mm-hmm. And stay with her friends where she's protecting animals.
Why do you think that?
Because that was her original opinion, mm-hmm. and she's been studying that.
Kate doesn't say that was her original opinion. She wrote a report.
But she belonged to these organizations mm-hmm. because she believed in them. Mm-hmm. So she should stay with them. Otherwise, down the line, she's going to regret that she gave in to the politicians.
What do you make of... her boss's, Walter Jackson's, argument that perhaps by compromising on this one, we may have much longer range benefits accrue to it.
I think he's backing out.
I think he's compromising himself.
He's compromising.
Yeah,
he wants company.
I think it's a power and control issue.
How so?
Well, I think you're dealing with a heavily political situation where you are buying and selling power. And I think Walter Jackson got bought off by Senator Elder and the mining and agricultural interests of Arizona. And basically what he's attempting to do then is to implement his compromise by basically laying it at Erica's feet.
Even if he didn't get
bought
off, even if he just really sincerely thinks this is the most effective way to go in this political world, politically corrupt, however you want to think of it, but even there, I think individuals they risk the danger of losing themselves if they go that route. I don't think that's my point.
Yeah. Another thing, what Walter Jackson could in the end fire Erica Mann, and she may wind up school teacher, but that's still good. Something else, not into her. And she'll never be able to have a chance at fighting for the right of other species. Uh-huh. So in the end, she could lose, and then the world has lost a good fighter for her.
So that would be an argument made.
After all, she's new on the job. She can get fired right away, and that's it.
And he may get orders from the top to get rid of that whistleblower down there. By the way, that's another issue here. Is basically, she would be involved in whistleblowing, which is an interesting ethical issue of itself. Rick?
Another part of the integrity question would be the integrity of the Endangered Species Act. You talk about it as a fairly strong piece of legislation as it originally came out, but every species that kind of slips through the cracks waters down that, that legislation to lose the ability to protect other species in the future. So Walter's argument may be blowing in the wind.
That's a good point.
I think the whole thing is probably based on economics. People, as a rule, are greedy. People who have power have money. And people who have money do all they can to keep the money in their own circles. And so the whole thing is based on greed and economics, and they probably don't care who's about the dam or the snake, but it's in power and money, and we're being all idealistic, paying over human greed.
There's an old saying in the West that water flows towards money. I always like that. Uphill even.
My son asked me to give his opinion, and I talked to him about this. And some of you know I'm 6 years old. First he said, "Well, Dad, you know I like to drink water, so I think they ought to build a dam." And then he thought about 5 minutes later, and he said, "Dad, you know that question you asked me? I think maybe they ought to save the snake." So.
And as a good teacher, did you ask him why? Because the teacher's always the teacher's question.
That's right. He said, "Well, you know, maybe there's a purpose for the snake or something like that."
What do the rest of you think? How about some of you who haven't spoken so far? Would you venture your opinion?
Well, the question of this species versus one down the road. In the next one, there are an awful lot of hungry loggers out there. Every single case that comes up, there are going to be equally compelling circumstances to, well, let's put this one off, too.
Yeah, so the same battle will be fought next, the same argument.
And not only that, then having bought this one, someone will say, well, but back then, you didn't seem to mind when.
Yeah, or once one compromise is made, the second one becomes a little bit easier.
Right, you have to justify yourself.
Slippery slope. I don't usually like slippery slope arguments because they are always very catastrophic. I would say that there's a tendency to compromise the second time when you've done the first, but that doesn't mean you'd go down the tubes. And, you know, that's what the slippery slope argument is, and it's not a very good one usually. Other opinions? Let me return then to the question that you raised about the scientific assessment of the report. A lot of people interpret in this case the fact that her report has been altered to indicate that that a artificial habitat could be constructed is a misuse of her integrity. That is to say, they're doing to Erica what they're going to do to the snake. It's to run roughshod over people for the purpose of their end, which is the construction of this dam. And you raised a very interesting point, would you care to repeat it so that we could bring it up for a discussion?
Basically, one division has written that the state can be changed in habitat, and she's written not. And of course, she's a herpetologist and has lived it, but that doesn't mean that she's the expert, totally. I mean, there may be two divisions. I happen to know the kid that used to be at New York Zoo and also down here at Woodland Park, and his feeling about ecology and some things are much different than other zoo managers in ecology.
Do you think that's what's going on in this case?
Could be.
What do the rest of you think?
I don't think that's what was presented.
Well, what's presented in this case is her report on this specific about habitat, the report that came back from the Bureau, and some hearsay evidence from Susan Winston, who says that through the grapevine she's heard that Senator Elder has put pressure on the department. That's what we know.
There isn't any other. What we didn't get was another report from another, scientist that had different findings. I didn't hear that in here.
There was none.
No.
It said that there was an independent report made by I assume a consulting agent in private environment just talked about the snake and how it's decreasing habitat threatens extinction.
Right.